Charm of Favor, Chapter 4.
By the 9th of July, 2016, D.C. was already on fire with political upheaval. This election was the greatest show on earth, but people outside the Beltway had no idea how intense this war for control of the largest checkbook the world had ever known had become. Donald Trump was declared the presumptive candidate on May 3rd, and this city was still remained in a state of disbelief. Everyone was suddenly a political advisor with ideas on how to dominate the debates, which, by all accounts, had become the gladiator games that decided the last four elections. People here still remember Mitt Romney mopping the floor with Barack Obama in the first presidential debate of 2012. There were a lot of half-empty beers left on the counter that night as the Democrat had his ass handed to him in no uncertain terms before a global audience. The thought of Obama being a one-term president had never entered anyone's mind. In fact, most people thought his smooth persona eclipsed anyone in politics for a generation, and that if anyone could be granted an exception to the 22nd Amendment, it would be him. It was both a relief and a mystery as to why, just 2 weeks before the election, Mitt Romney quit the race. Right there in front of global live coverage, Mitt Romney cowered and stuttered like a kid caught watching porn by his parents. He was lost. He was ineffectual. He was scared to death. Something happened to Mitt in between those two debates. Some power beyond him, beyond even the power of the presidency, had reached him and told him to throw the race. Because that is precisely what he did on October 23rd, 2012. Obama brushed his opponent off onto the floor like a speck of belly button lint, and the election was over, just like that. This was Democrat territory, and there were few places politics was not discussed openly. There were few things that sold booze like politics. Most of the time, it was peaceful. After all, no self-respecting Republican would be caught inside Lou's City Bar. "Hey, Mike, you're a little early, aren't you?" asked Maddie, the bar manager, as she put her chunk of keys up against the second deadbolt and gave it a twist. Her easy, split-toothed smile and instant sense of humor had built this single location into a multi-million-dollar business in less than 3 years. "Lucy got back with the dogs early, and I bought this new program I want to load into the show. I thought we'd take a little time to load it and try it out," said Mike. "You want that I should give you a key? No problem. You want a sandwich and a beer? I can make you something," said Maddie with her thick Brooklyn accent. "How about some pretzels? I'll take that beer. It'll take at least one to make sure this thing doesn't glitch during the show. It kind of sucks when your virtual band takes a shit in the middle of the set," said Mike, happy to see Maddie smile as she held the door open for him. "Baby, could you come back and help me? I don't want to let this touch the ground," said Lucy, holding her computer bag in one hand and a long formal gown on a hanger in the other. "Oh yeah," said Mike, putting the shoulder bag on the high table just inside the door and short-stepping back to her to grab the gown and hold it up. "We might leave early if you wear this, you know that, right?" "You don't want my art to show?" she asked playfully. "Hey, they get the voice, I get the art," he said, kissing her on the cheek. "It's permanent, you know," she said, tugging her blouse open to just reveal the stunning floral tattoo that covered the flawless skin above her left breast. "I know it doesn't rub off, that's what I know," he said, walking backward with the gown into the bar and watching her spiked heels zag around her black yoga pants. "You're such a boy. Don't ever grow up," she said, smiling broadly. "I'm going to load this drum track program in, and then we can check it out. It's got a strong section I think will jazz the set a little better than the one we've been using," he said, closing the door behind her. "Hang that in the closet up there. I'll change right before the show," said Lucy. "You got it. Hey, grab that bowl of pretzels off the bar. Maddie laid them out for me," said Mike as he disappeared up the short set of stairs that led to the dressing room where the entertainers get ready. Sometimes they have comics come to Lou City Bar. They have live local bands from time to time, but Mike and Lucy were the best diva show in D.C. They were funny and gorgeous, and Lucy could sing anyone into the bottom of a glass. Mike was not just a piano player. He was a true artist who could transpose music on the fly and compose and arrange virtual instruments with his computer to sound like a full band, complete with riffs and harmonies. Once he learned how to record Lucy's phenomenal voice, the duo could deliver spine-tingling duets with Lucy squared. The place could safely hold about 80 people, but close to last call, the duo could pack Lou's City Bar with more than 100 people on their feet and tipping the jar full of cash. It was a Friday, but that didn't mean much during election season. Besides, Bernie Sanders had been winning state after state in recent primaries and caucuses around the country. The entire world thought Hillary was going to be crowned the president she was always meant to be. But for this crotchety old man, she would be working on her general campaign by now. One look at the Feel the Burn t-shirt mounted on a wall frame and hung by the bar, and one would immediately know that Bernie Sanders was a hero at Lou's. There were so many young Democrats who wouldn't even think of voting for a Republican, but they were also looking for an alternative to Hillary Clinton. It wasn't the age. Bernie was old by any standard, but he wasn't sleeping with Wall Street while he insulted them, like Hillary. Most young people had lost hope of ever owning any real estate anyway, so the fact that his platform called for the end of private property didn't bother them. Besides, Congress would put him in a box and let him make speeches and vacation for 4 years while the country relaxed and had fun for a while. That was the ticket. Bernie was fun. And Hillary was, well, Hillary was not fun. That didn't take long, said Mike, clapping his hands together. It works? You finally bought a program that works? Asked Lucy, snapping a pretzel in two and tossing the smaller piece through her dark red lips. Oh, yeah, it's made by the same people. It should hook up perfect. See? I just select the instruments, set the time signature, the tempo, and bingo. Now all we have to do is press OK, and the rest is like a band in a can, said Mike. Is it as good as you? Maybe I'll trade up, said Lucy, pushing her lips out a little bit. I can handle the competition. You see, batteries are not included, but with me you always get the real deal, said Mike, putting his arms around her long black hair and kissing her lips lightly. Oh yeah, self-inflating, this one. Here's your beer, Slick Rock, said Maddie. We open in 10 minutes. Showtime at, what, 8 o'clock? We'll do 3 sets. Give them an hour break in between. Last one at, say, midnight, asked Mike. That'll do. Kitchen closes at 10, last call at 2 a.m., but you guys can bug out around 1 if you want to, said Maddie. I'm cool with that. I have a date, said Mike, letting his arms drop away from Lucy's neck. Mike ate his pastrami on marbled rye bread and drank his beer at the bar while Lucy played solitaire next to him. Maddie turned on the 4 TV screens and dialed in the sports stations and put bottles of beer in the cooler from the cases on the floor. The cook brought ice out from the kitchen in plastic buckets and filled the stainless steel hoppers beneath the bar. The door opened, and Mike turned to see who was coming in. "Hey, Mikey, I'm glad you guys are here tonight. I was hoping for some good music," said Seth, walking up with his right hand out. "Mr. Rich, it's good to see you. How goes the campaign business?" asked Mike, putting his half-sandwich back on the plate and grabbing his hand to shake it. "Like shit, as usual," said Seth. "Oh, come on. This is your time. I mean, you guys are ahead in all the polls. It's awesome, right?" asked Mike, patting Seth on the shoulder of his sports jacket as Seth loosened his tie. The polls don't mean squat, Mikey. The ones who have the gold, you know, said Seth, nodding at Maddie as she automatically drew the right beer into a glass for Seth. Thank you, baby, said Seth. Don't tell me that Donald is going to win, said Mike, taking a bite out of a sandwich. Not if I can help it. Superdelegates, my man. It's all about a bunch of bulging little envelopes and superdelegates. That's what I mean, said Seth. There, you see? That's why we play music. Good, honest work, said Lucy, nearly kissing Seth on the cheek. Yeah. I guess it's all entertainment in the end, but the winner gets to write checks from the United States Treasury, said Seth, taking a long drink from his beer. Still, when I go home, I can turn it off. I mean, no one asked me for $1 billion for a new bridge or an airport, said Mike. Look, no one is saying politics ain't dirty work. It's just supposed to be about politics and not bribery. Okay, maybe there's a little under-the-table stuff. But Clinton is right in our face with this. She makes no bones about it. The committee is supposed to choose a nominee through campaigning and voting and shit. It's not supposed to be a freaking coronation set up by a handful of billionaires, said Seth, unintentionally spitting a little beer and wiping his mouth with the back of his hand. I thought Trump was the billionaire, said Lucy. Oh, yeah, he's a billionaire, the hard way, said Seth, putting an extra emphasis on the A. Maybe I should have said trillionaire. Bernie is facing down a power structure that has been 30 years in the making. Well, look, stranger things have happened, right? Look at Obama. He was a nobody, out of nowhere, and he beat Hillary the last time. What's anyone know about it, said Mike, finishing the last bite of his sandwich. He was a smooth talker, that one. Hillary was like a screech owl compared to Bruno Mars. That's why he won, said Maddie, wiping the bar in front of Seth. Yeah, that's right. She had the superdelegates then, too, didn't she, asked Lucy. True enough. And they changed horses pretty close to the end there, as I remember, said Mike. Yeah. It ain't over till it's over, sweetie, said Maddie. Well, I can tell you that very soon people are going to find out just how dangerous this woman is, that's all, said Seth, holding his finger up and swallowing the last of the beer in his glass, and nodding to Maddie, who was already drawing another beer in a clean, frosted glass. All presidents are dangerous, aren't they? Asked Lucy. Yeah, I mean, people might just be afraid of a powerful woman, right? Asked Maddie as she set the glass of beer in front of Seth. We're talking about the Clintons, people, said Seth, submerging his upper lip into the cold blonde ale. Oh, what, a little error in judgment? That makes them dangerous? Said Lucy, shuffling the cards to deal out another solitaire hand. Getting caught in a hot tub with the village people is an error in judgment. Shooting your lawyer in the park is called homicide, said Seth. Who said that? Nobody said that, said Mike. You're right. They only found his body in the park, said Seth coldly. Holy shit, Seth. That's pretty heavy coming from Captain America of the DNC, said Mike. Don't make fun of him. I like that star-spangled shirt on you, said Lucy, looking up from the cards to smile at Seth. I do too, said Maddie. Well, I don't feel too star-spangled right now, pardon me for saying. This is supposed to be a democracy. I'm beginning to feel like it's Cuba or something, said Seth, taking another sip. What does that mean? Asked Mike. John Podesta fell for a phishing email and gave out his password. The emails were published by WikiLeaks, and Debbie Schultz got fired for trying to fix the nomination. It's a total mess down there right now, said Seth. I thought that was just the bullshit in the news, said Mike. No bullshit. I have proof that Hillary bought off the superdelegates and even hacked into Bernie's donor database, said Seth, really sipping hard on the chilled glass of beer. The super what? What the hell are you saying? Asked Lucy, paying closer attention now. Superdelegates. They're like royalty in the DNC. They're mucky mucks. You know, previous congressmen, governors, speakers, big donors. They've all been bought and paid for by the Clinton machine. Even if Bernie wins a primary, he doesn't win the state, because these super pricks know what's best for the party, said Seth, barely able to contain his anger. Oh, baby, I'm so sorry. I know how much you like Bernie. We all like him, said Lucy. I don't know about you, but Hillary scares the shit out of me, said Maddie, sliding another beer over the counter to Seth, who traded his empty glass. Yeah. Well, maybe someone will do something about it. Maybe some more information should get out there, said Seth, loosening his collar a little. Well, Tonight we're going to enjoy some music and some beer and have a good time, said Mike. That's why I'm here. My favorite bar with my favorite people, said Seth, holding his glass up for a toast. Oh, you do have a future in politics, Mr. Rich, said Maddie, smiling. I'll drink to that. Can I have a grapefruit juice on the rocks? Helps the voice, said Lucy, gently patting her paper-white throat. Oh, baby, if your voice gets any sweeter, you'll have to go pro, said Maddie. Here you go. Yeah, speaking of pro, we better do a little sound check to make sure this setup works. I mean, before the paying customers arrive, said Mike, smiling at Seth and putting his arm on his shoulder. You guys are the best, you know, said Seth, smiling back so hard his blue eyes almost disappeared. Make this guy a sandwich before he gets too drunk, said Mike, shaking him a little. Damn, son, you've been working out? A little. I have a membership close to the house when I get time, said Seth, flexing his broad shoulders under his brown sports coat. Most eligible bachelor you are, said Maddie, winking at Seth. How about at last? From the top, asked Mike, handing Lucy the wireless mic and sitting down at the keyboard. The sultry words of Etta James filled the bar like whiskey and ice, cooling a parched mouth. Lucy's voice was powerful and clean. She swiveled slowly on the bar stool and stared into Seth's eyes while her lean muscles controlled the resonance in her chest. She didn't bend the pitch to get the effect like an amateur. Her breath massaged the words through her perfectly shaped mouth, catching the listener off guard like watching a low-flying albatross bank slowly across a glassy bay, almost touching the mirror, defying gravity. Seth didn't move. He could barely breathe himself while he watched the words crafted on the lips of this antique porcelain doll. The strings from the virtual band faded out as Mike tinkled the final notes on the keyboard. Lucy blinked, her shaded lids slowly over her dark brown eyes, releasing Seth from his trance. How was that? Asked Lucy. That was amazing, said Seth. That's it? Only amazing? You better do it again, said Maddie. It was perfect, baby, said Mike. That's a wrap, then. I have a good feeling about this new band thing you got going, said Lucy. Yeah, it sounded great. I like the brush on the snare. Do you want a little reverb on your voice? Asked Mike. No. I mean, don't touch a thing. That voice is perfect, said Seth, taking a sip of beer like he hadn't had one in an hour. You're sweet, said Lucy, taking her own sip from the icy grapefruit juice. Mike and Lucy walked up the stairs to the dressing room, and Lou's City Bar slowly began to fill with neighbors and friends. Maddie turned up the jukebox, and quarters began dropping classics one after the other as the Friday night hum began building. Voices and laughter pawed at the dressing room door like a puppy wanting attention. The evening gown slipped over Lucy's shoulders and down onto her body like red ice flowing over a street lamp. Her left shoulder was left bare, exposing a dozen shades of green foliage and dark red flowers wrapped around her curved bicep. Her right shoulder and cleavage arrested the shiny fabric before it hugged her toned torso and followed her round ass like downhill racers heading for certain death. She sat smoothly in the rocking chair, and Mike lifted her bare foot into his warm hands and rubbed deeply. I don't mind being fashionably late, said Lucy, rocking her head back like he had just turned the right control on a fine stereo. I just want to make those heels a little easier to stand in for an hour. I know how much better you sing when your feet feel good, he whispered. You can hear me singing, can't you? She said, looking him in the eyes without blinking. I am your humble servant king, said Mike. Shall we see if the slippers fit? She asked as loud clapping erupted from downstairs. We have a couple minutes. Let me have the other foot, said Mike, gently lowering it to the floor. Oh, no argument here, said Lucy, raising her other foot into his warm grip. I love you, my queen, said Mike. As well you should, said Lucy. I wish my dad was here. I mean to hear us, said Mike. We'll see him at Thanksgiving, said Lucy. I know. I just wish he could get out and hear us one time. Well, let's bring your mom and dad up for a couple days. We'll make room. They'll love it, said Lucy. We can do that. We'll see what works. I like the idea. How's that feel? Said Mike, pulling the last of the tension out of her toes. Like I could sing all night, said Lucy, leaning forward to kiss him deeply. I love rubbing your feet, said Mike. You like the kisses after rubbing my feet, said Lucy, chirping a kiss on his lips again. I like the kisses even better. Let's go knock 'em dead, said Mike, as he slipped the first shiny stiletto-heeled shoe onto her smooth white foot. Let me shine my lips, and I'll be right down, said Lucy, standing in the shoes. I'll see you down there, said Mike, as he opened the wooden door and closed it behind him. Mike walked down the short set of stairs onto the landing, and the applause erupted. He held out his hands for them to stop, but it got even louder. His tuxedo jacket was a sharp contrast to the office shirts and company polos in the almost packed bar. The jukebox seemed almost too loud, but he shook hands and hugged the women politely as he made his way to the keyboard. Maddie put a bottle of ice-cold water on the small square next to his keyboard and pecked him on the cheek. He sat down and looked around the room. Nearly every table was occupied, and Seth smiled back from a high table opposite the door. Two young men and a woman stood at the same table and were clapping along with Seth. Thank you, everyone. Good evening, and welcome to Lou's City Bar. This is the Lucy and Mike Show. You'll know why it's not the other way around before the first song is finished. Don't forget to tip your waitress, said Mike, as the jukebox fell silent and his hands glided over the keyboard and played a masterful version of Miles Davis' 1,000 Miles. The applause was thundering as he looked up the stairs to see a crack of light turn off from the door. He pressed the button on the screen, and the sweet strings of the Etta James piece began. At last, my love has come along, came Lucy's voice from the dark of the stairs. She poured slowly down the stairs, singing, intoxicating the room as the glitter in her black hair picked up the LED lights they had carefully placed along the narrow stage. The small gelled Fresnels shattered across the threads in her red dress, and shards of light sliced through the room like crystal sugar over a frozen strawberry. The rehearsal version was a saltine cracker compared to the syrup she deftly poured over the heads of the people in Lou's City Bar. If they were tired from a long week of the election nonsense of the most powerful city in the world, they couldn't feel it now. They couldn't feel anything but the cool drink in the throat and the finest sound humans could possibly endure. It was a moment of escape, into that special place where time stops and joy blends with misery, like a picture plucked from the album and held in the hands for a closer look without the plastic cover, just to hold the moment before the exhale and the deep and empty swallow. There was this time when we didn't have pain to make us feel alive. It was now, like no other now, and then like a light reflected off a passing car outside, something in the window and across the photo, was the hint of tomorrow. It couldn't possibly be the same. It most certainly wouldn't be better, as the edge of the photo slips under the cover of the album to be put away. It might not even arrive at all. As usual, Lou's City Bar soon made the last call well before Seth wanted to stop being out with friends. He refused Mike's offer to drive him home. He didn't want to go home yet, and there was an after-hours club a few blocks away. He was 27 years old, born on the 3rd of January, 1989, and already he felt like he was carrying a burden too heavy for a long journey. He loved talking to people, and especially about politics. He paid his tab, shook hands, and waved to Lucy as she smiled back at him and winked while talking to some of her fans who were also saying goodbye. He pocketed his wallet, looked at his gold watch his father had bought him for graduation, and walked out the door into the warm July just before 2 a.m. The air felt amazing as he put his hands in his pockets and started to walk toward the after-hours club. "I'm actually walking pretty straight," he told himself, imagining his liver working like a factory to metabolize the 18 beers he had drained. The Democratic Party knew how to party, but they also were the party of the big top. Well, at least they used to be before this election. It didn't feel so much like it was her turn, so much as it felt like it was her right to be president. He had met Bernie Sanders many times. Truth be told, he was an easy person to meet. It wasn't as though his ideas would ever fully be implemented, but if they got close, it would be a better place for his generation. After all, tailgating outside the stadium was getting old. He wanted to be in the stands or maybe on the field with the players. And Bernie made him feel that way. Most of the people at Lou's felt that way, but not everyone. That's what made it so much fun to go there and talk politics and drink beer. It was just a special kind of heaven when Mike and Lucy came to sing. God, she was good, he said to himself as he turned the corner and lengthened his stride. He felt his face getting warm from the walk, and he wiped his forehead with the back of his hand. It was then that he heard steps behind him. He hadn't passed anyone. The sidewalks in this quiet, upscale neighborhood of little houses and older remodeled flats was pretty well lit except for the construction walls here and there along the sidewalk. People complained about the plywood, but they also didn't want to get hit in the head by a tool drop from the second floor above the sidewalk. He hadn't heard any car doors close or seen any porch lights come on. He thumbed his cell phone alive and called his girlfriend. She didn't like it when he drank so much, but he was feeling romantic. He barely had a moment to speak or sense the danger when the numbing impact struck his left shoulder blade. Before he could reach for it or turn around, another round felt like it came through his chest from behind. He tried to take a breath, but he couldn't. His diaphragm had gone into spasms, and as he began choking on blood filling his left lung, his chest heaved, but his throat had closed off, and the air seemed to come into his chest from behind, but it never reached his lungs. Within seconds he fell to his knees, and somewhere, in a dream, his face struck the concrete sidewalk. Seth Rich was murdered on the sidewalk of a quiet Washington, D.C. suburb in cold blood on July 10th, 2016, within minutes of leaving Lou City Bar. Surveillance tapes in the bar may have had the face of his killer clearly recorded, but police refused to look at it. After 30 days, the bar's manager let the DVR overwrite that evening. Police would say it was a foiled robbery, although Seth's wallet and watch were not missing. Someone wanted him dead, and it is clear it was not the killer. The shooter could have easily stepped forward to put another bullet in his head, but the message was delivered. He only wanted to be paid. By whom, it seems, law enforcement to this very day has no desire to disclose to the courts or to the public.